my jeans was the moment I kept freezing up. I just wouldn't put any on. Problem solved.
When I walked naked out of the bathroom, Dancer's back was to me, but he must have heard me because he turned around holding the pie and teased.
Mega, I know you definitely want mushrooms on your p-p-p-.
The pizza hit the floor and exploded when he dropped it. Crust went flying and sauce splattered across the floorboards and up the cabinets. Not that he noticed.
Holy fucking fuck,
he said fiercely, then stood with his mouth ajar saying nothing. After a moment he snapped it shut so hard his teeth clapped together. He stood there, trying to keep his gaze on my face, like maybe it wouldn't be polite to stare at my body. And I teased, Dancer, you big gorgeous geek. I took all my clothes off so you would look at me. Permission granted, his gaze dropped like a stone. He looked down, up, down, and up again. I shivered as his gaze moved over me, making me feel hot and cold at the same time. He stared and stared, and just when I was wondering what I might have to do to move things along, he reached behind his head, yanked off his shirt, unbuckled his belt, dropped his jeans, kicked them away into the pizza sauce, and he was naked too.
Couldn't let you be naked alone,
he murmured. No, I agreed. That wouldn't be right.
And I want everything to be right. I want it to be perfect for us. For you. You deserve that.
He moved toward me, finally, still looking me up and down, slow and intense and astonished and gratifyingly awed. For all my bluster about being epic when I finally had sex, I felt shaky and nervous, and not at all composed. Butterflies fluttered from my stomach all the way up my throat. I tested my ability to access the slipstream. It was gone, and I was relieved. I didn't want to hurt him. I'm pretty sure since neither of us have done this before, it won't be perfect. But he was perfect. I'd seen my share of naked men. And although Dancer got shorted in the heart department, he hadn't been shorted anywhere else. He was young and hot and sexy, and his eyes were brilliant and shining and round with wonder.
Are you kidding me?
He reached for my hand.
With our IQs and hearts, if we can't make love right, there's something seriously wrong with us.
I let him lead me, walking slightly behind him, enjoying the view of his back and ass. His skin was darker than mine. But then again, pretty much everyone's is, and I couldn't wait to touch it everywhere. As he moved, muscles rippled, and I shivered thinking about him stretching naked on top of me, pushing inside, wrapping my legs around him. His name suited him. He moved like a dancer. Powerful, controlled, strong. Stopping at the bed, he turned, stared at me, a long moment, then with an explosive exhale said,
Christ, Danny, you're so beautiful. So...
Epic? I said helpfully. He laughed.
In every possible way. I dreamed about this. Prayed that I'd live long enough, and you'd live long enough that you'd grow up and see me as a man. You're the most fearless, brilliant, incredible woman I've ever met. What did I do to deserve you? Are you sure you want me to be your first?
He said, like he couldn't believe it.
Mega, I'm just a guy and you're, well, you're everything.
His beautiful eyes were so honest and earnest it melted me. I took his hand and drew it to my body, put his palm against my stomach and slid it up to my breast, shivering when he grazed my nipple with his thumb. You're not just anything. I never could be. And you did everything to deserve me. You listened to me and let me breathe and talk and teach me things. You're brilliant. And you're kind and good and constant. And you're epic, too. Yes. I'm definitely, absolutely, 100% certain I want you to be my first. There's no one else, Dancer. It's you. Just like that, I banished Raiden's ghost from between us. He inhaled sharply, then his hands were moving on my skin, sliding to cup my breasts gently, then hungrily. And for the first time since I'd met him, he looked at me and did nothing to disguise the lust and desire he felt for me, and I gasped. It was staggering. He wanted me so much. I loved seeing that in his eyes. I felt everything his hands were doing as intensely as I feel all my emotions, like the cells in his body were sinking into the cells of my body, touching me all the way to the place where my soul used to be. It wasn't like in movies, where everything goes flawlessly, and the lighting is all fuzzy, soft focus, and the music is just right. That's illusion. Reality is two people who care deeply about each other, getting to know each other as intimately as possible. And it's full of sounds and awkward movements and occasional strained laughter. It took us a bit to get past the shaky, nervous part. But when we did, we found that our bodies moved together as easily, hungrily, and passionately as our minds. When I used to daydream about losing my virginity, I always thought I'd put on a show when I had sex for the first time. Be the femme fatale, dazzling, wild, and most definitely on top. I'd rock his world and not think about mine. I'd impress, because that's what I do. I impress because I'm never sure people will like me otherwise. None of that mattered with Dancer. He was already impressed with me, and I got to be just who I was, and it was slow and easy and beautiful. And it was clumsy at times, and so damned personal and vulnerable, and he slid his long length over my body and rocked himself into me gently and with exquisite care, cradling my head, staring into my eyes the entire time. And when we found our rhythm and he moved inside me, I started to cry and couldn't stop. Not sloppy, just silent tears rolling down my cheeks. I stared up at him. And he looked down and he started to cry too. And without saying a word, we both understood why the other was crying. No matter how much time we had with each other, it would be too short. Because he could die or I could die. Or we could both live a century and it still wouldn't be long enough. He was just good. And with him, so was I. And life lost all its sharp, dangerous edges when we were together. I cried because I'd never felt so much emotion in my life. I cried for my mom, who never once felt safe and maybe never knew this kind of moment. She knew the other kind, the ones that demean and leave you emptier than you began. I cried for everything I'd lost. I cried for his heart and the world. I touched the tears glittering in his long, dark eyelashes, caught and kissed them, then kissed him with the salty tang of both our tears on our tongues. Then neither of us was crying, but our eyes were locked, wide with wonder, as he moved faster and deeper, and my body trembled around him, and my orgasm made a kaleidoscope inside my skull. I didn't just come with my body. The explosion of so much sensation did something to my head, too, as if it was injecting an incredible chemical into my brain, and suddenly I was no longer shorted out, and I started to vibrate, and we both looked at each other, startled. Then he started to growl, and I realized what my vibrating was doing to him, and I started to laugh, and so did he. But he was growling and gasping too, and he shook on top of me and threw his head back and groaned and sort of roared. And it was the best sound I've ever heard. Dancer, free and happy and totally alive. I held him afterward, cradling his head to my chest. Smiling because I had some really cool tricks I could do, and I couldn't wait to explore all of them with him. I drifted a bit then, and so did he. And as I was floating in that dreamy place, he said softly against my ear,
I see you, Yi-Yi.
I see you too, Dancer. We killed the clocks that night. It stretched impossibly long, as if just for us, time stood still. We made love over and over, trying anything and everything during those long hours of him kissing me all over, touching me with just the right amount of reverence and lust, and some part of me was reborn. Something I hadn't even understood had died a long, long time ago, It was young and new, and would need nurturing, but it was there. Deep in my core, that nameless thing found a way to be, shifted and settled into place like a bone wrenched from its socket long ago. I had no idea what it was, but I'd figure it out eventually. No thinking tonight, just feeling. While my long-held suspicion about brainy men was proved true, Dancer had the inventive imagination of a geek, zero inhibitions, and the lusty hunger of a man that lived each day with full awareness of his own mortality. Brainy is the new sexy. When I woke to the mid-morning sun, slanting in the windows across our bed, his breathing was rough and labored, and he was gasping in his sleep. This was what he'd never let me see. The bad times. These were the days he'd overtaxed his heart, gone into hiding from me so I would never know that he thought he wasn't man enough for me. I never once asked where he'd gone or why, telling myself friends didn't ask questions because they required answers and requirements were cages. Told myself he just wanted time alone, like me. But now I knew all those days I'd been freeze-framing around the city, burning off my boundless energy and steam. He'd been lying in a bed somewhere, trying to gather enough strength just to get back out of it. Alone or with those friends he'd permitted to know about his problem and see him that way. Perhaps Kiva had been with him, bringing him food, making sure he survived. I drew reassurance from those times, because it meant it had been happening for a while. And that meant it could continue to happen. And maybe he would live a whole life this way, and I could deal with that. But I sure wasn't going to be having sex with him 5 times in a single night anymore. We were going to have to pace ourselves, and maybe I shouldn't vibrate either. I placed my palms gently against his chest and tried to will some of my strength into him. I closed my eyes and imagined beams of light bathing his heart in healing. But the power to heal isn't one of my super strengths. And he woke up, sat up and leaned back against the headboard. We sat together and held hands and waited for him to feel better. I wanted to ask him if there was medicine he could take. I wanted to know if there was some kind of surgery that could be done, assuming we could find a heart surgeon. I said none of those things, because Dancer was brilliant and he loved being alive. And if there had been anything he could have done, he would have by now. The only gift I could give him was the one that wouldn't make me feel better, but would make him feel okay. So, I pretended it was nothing. And we didn't talk about the elephant in the room as it tossed its mighty head and swung its trunk, threatening to break all fragile things in its way. And I cleaned last night's pizza off the floor and cabinets, but he made us powdered eggs with dried salmon and cream cheese on toast. Then we headed out into the city, holding hands, young and in love, eager to see what the day might bring. 54. Waiting for the End. Zara. The man who called himself Rain found her a house with a large walled garden on the outskirts of Dublin, and she spent her days outside, whether rain or shine, weeding and spreading seeds he'd brought her for the animals, talking to her Tamura, but not to him at all. She had no idea why he was taking care of her, unless he found her beautiful and helpless and, like so many men, liked beautiful, helpless women, far more than they liked strong queens. Were she mortal, perhaps she'd have spent a life with him, because, for the most part, he left her alone. Sometimes she'd catch him watching her when he thought she was lost in a reverie. Sometimes she thought she saw sadness in his eyes, but attributed that to an odd trick of shadow and light. He seemed to be waiting for something. She didn't know what, and frankly didn't care. She was waiting to die. She could no longer feel the earth except in a far dimmer, more muted version than Zara once had. Diluted by her fey essence, cut off from the true magic, she had only a shallow connection to the world around her. Yet she forged on, by rote, performing those actions that had once given her joy. She was grateful the Earth was dying and would soon take her, because living in such a fashion wasn't living at all. As Queen of the Fae, power, care for her race, and immortality had been her compensation. As a powerless immortal that couldn't experience sensation, there was no benefit. If he'd wanted to make love to her, she would have done it. If he'd wanted her to sleep or eat or dance, she would have done it. It didn't matter what she did or didn't do anymore. When, one day, he took her hand and said he wanted to take her somewhere, she went, because there was no difference between staying and going. Life was long and blank and tiring. 55. Set me free, why don't you, baby? Mac. I've watched nightfall many different ways since I came to Dublin. When I first arrived, it often snuck up on me, subtly turning a darker shade of slate and fog, leaving no clear line of demarcation between afternoon and night. For a girl from hot, sunny southern Georgia, it had been beyond depressing. Impossible to say, oh, wasn't that a nice sunset, when you hardly ever saw the damn thing. The sky simply occupied itself all day, muddying and glooming, rolling with thick thunderclouds, and the next thing you knew, it was night, as if there had been much bloody difference. Other times it had come slamming down so hard it frightened me. One instant the sky blew agate, the next I was virtually blind, navigating shades and alleys of pitch and monsters with the lights of my Mac halo blazing. And yet other times, once the Fae were fully established in our world, night had fallen in infinitesimal degrees, with breathtaking beauty, splashing a dazzling rainbow across the horizon for a half hour or more, painting a fat crimson halo to stain the moon, as kaleidoscopic hues of fairy kissed everything from the neon signs shimmering on wet pavement to the amber gas lamps, coloring Dublin exquisite shades of pink, purple, orange, and gold never before seen by humans. Tonight, as I made my way back to BB&B from dinner with my family, the sky treated me to one of those slow, extraordinary sunsets, and with the true magic binding me to the earth, it touched my soul so deeply, I stopped and stood in the street, staring up at the sky, and cried. I stood there with tears rolling down my cheeks for a good half hour, watching night descend. Our world was sick, so diseased, and so damn beautiful, and there was nothing I could do to save it. I'd come so far, defeated the Shisadu not once but twice. By quirk of happenstance, become the Fae Queen's successor, solved the riddle of the music box, and acquired half of the legendary song. But it was like having half a car, or half a gun, or half a child. Useless. The prophecy hadn't been quite right. I wasn't going to destroy the world. I was going to fail to save it. Dublin was a ghost town. We'd been sending people off-world as soon as they arrived, and as the city had emptied, the Fae, too, began to disappear. With humans vanishing, they'd had no reason to remain in our town and repaired to Faerie. Now they huddled, panicked, trapped at court, no more able to sift back out than I could sift in. I could feel them, this race I was supposed to save, their shallow fear and unrest, their impatience and mistrust as they waited for their new queen to move their seat of power from a dying world, unaware it was impossible. I'd not told them. Apparently Cruz hadn't either. Only the prior queen had known their fate was irrevocably bound to the planet. Cruz's silence on that score was a blessing for which I was grateful. If he'd been feeling vengeful, and God knows he'd looked vengeful when I'd last seen him, he could have told both courts the truth and led them to war against us, spitefully wiping out as much of the human race as he could, preventing us from escaping off-world. But he hadn't. He'd vanished, and we'd not heard a peep nor seen a sign of him since. What power Cruz had! He held the fate of an entire race and a planet in his hands. Bitter over the Queen's choice of me as successor, harboring no love for humans and even less for Seeley. What was he doing now? No doubt hunting for a way to cheat death. Seeking some object of power or loophole. I sighed. If Diane would save the Unseelie, I believed Cruz might actually do it. But save the Seelie? What did he care if they died, along with so many humans we couldn't get off world in time? Like Cruz and the Seelie, the Unseelie, too, had vanished. I had no idea if he'd taken them off somewhere, or they decided to flee our dying world while they could still sift, lumber, slither, or crawl into the Silvers. My parents had finally agreed to leave and go off-world tomorrow night, but only because I'd promised to join them in 2 days. That was never going to happen. Barons could handle me dying in front of him. I would never do that to my parents. Parents should never have to watch their children die. I couldn't shake the feeling there was still something I could do. But what? Even the She-Seers had given up searching through the old lore, and had either already gone off-world or were spending their last days with people they loved, enjoying time on our planet until they were forced off. I had half a song, Cruz had the other half, and never the twain would meet.
Miss Lane.
A man fell into step beside me as I walked slowly toward the brilliant lights of the BB&B. Busy admiring my last days of looking at my store, my home, I absently murmured, Jane. Then, Inspector Jane! I whirled in the street to gape at him. If I'd seen him before I'd heard his voice, I wouldn't have recognized him. Now I knew why Danny had given me a funny look when Enyo had told us Jane was dead or missing in action, but she's never gotten around to telling me he'd turned Seelie Prince. Everyone believes you're dead or M.I.A., I exclaimed. He smiled faintly.
I left before the transformation became too obvious. They'd not have followed me. I'd trained them to kill the Fae.
Now he was as Fae as me. The tall, robust Liam Neeson look-alike had become a muscled younger version of himself, with the characteristic Fae long tawny hair, iridescent eyes, and a degree of smoldering sensuality that was disturbing. Like all Fae, he was beautiful.
The wife's not complaining,
he said, with a soft snort. I'm sure she's not, I murmured.
Says it's like the old days when we first met. My wee ones think it's the finest sort of thing, though I've lost the ability to sift. You?
A few days back was the last time it worked.
We're dying, aren't we? Not just the world, but you and I.
I nodded and told him what I hadn't told most people, cautioning him, if he hadn't already moved his family off-world, he needed to see to their safety. Say his goodbyes, because even if he left, he wouldn't survive, and his children might end up watching him die.
Do you know what will happen? Will we simply blip out of existence, or will we actually die somehow?
I have no idea. I'd wondered that myself.
I remember the day you fed me your tea and sandwiches. You opened my eyes, showed me what was happening, and you just opened my eyes again. I thank you for that. I'd have died last year, blundered into some alley, probably lost my family, too. I'll send them through when I must. How long do we have?
There's no telling. A week at best before... I trailed off, trying to think of a way to explain what I sensed. Not that a black hole was going to touch the Earth, but that the distortion they were causing was going to do something wholly new and catastrophic, beyond belief. I'd send them tomorrow night. That's when my parents are leaving. He nodded.
So you're the Fae Queen now?
And you're a Seelie Prince.
What the fuck?
He said softly. Probably all the Unseelie we ate.
No.
He said, tipping his head back and staring up at the stars.
I mean, how can this world be so bloody beautiful and just end? How can we let it?
I'd admired this man, even though he'd driven me batshit crazy at times. He had a good heart. I admired him even more now. though he was going to die, at the end his sorrow wasn't for himself, but for this incredible planet of ours. This wonderful, magnificent ball, spinning in space, filled with deserts and mountains, valleys and plains, rivers and caves, glaciers and oceans, animals of every kind that we couldn't get off-world. So many rare and precious species would be extinct in a matter of days. He looked back down at me, and tears glinted in his glowing, quixotic eyes.
How can we lose the Earth, Mac? Is there nothing we can do?
His words were a punch in my gut. It was my fault. I couldn't sing the song. Our world would die because of me. I didn't trust myself to speak, so I just shook my head. He sighed and said sadly,
Ah, well, Mac. Good luck to you and yours.
He gave me a little salute and sauntered briskly into the night. Halfway down the block, he called over his shoulder,
You may want to see Sean O'Banion. He's turned unseely. He and that young woman of his won't leave. They've taken a townhouse on Mockingbird Lane.
He told me the address, then vanished into the gloaming. Ah, Cat, I said and sighed. Then I trudged into BB&B, carrying the weight of the world on my shoulders. Literally. As I was settling in on the sofa, the doorbell tinkled, and I glanced at the entrance. The dreamy-eyed guy walked in. I had no idea why he used my door. I was pretty sure he could still sift, unlike the rest of us, or just ooze in, a great dark stain sliding down my chimney, arising up from the floorboards. A year ago, I'd have gotten excited, believing he was here to help, and if not, that I could surely talk him into it. I knew better now. Come to sing the song for us? I mocked anyway.
Don't have it. Evaporates when passed. You, Cruz, must put it back together.
Well, that seriously sucked, so I couldn't even talk him into it. I studied him intently as a thought occurred to me. There's something about this that's necessary. What is it? Do good and evil have to work together in some cosmic balance way?
Subjective. Still not seeing. Same source.
Are we being tested? He flashed me a smile, and for a moment I couldn't get enough air into my lungs.
Always. You owe me 3 boons, beautiful girl.
I don't know if I can grant them. My power is fading.
Can and will.
Who are you? I demanded. And why did he talk about the king in third person?
Told you. At Chester's. Said you're no more the king than I.
Because we both are in some way. Me with the book, but him how? He stopped at the sofa and fixed his starry gaze on me with a faint smile.
A skin that refused to return when summoned. I demanded my own fate. He is a storm. I am but a drop of his rain.
I saw you in the abbey. You became him.
Illusion. It amuses him. As does my defiance. He could reclaim me. When you see her, you will say nothing of my origins. She believes me human.
Her who?
The concubine.
I narrowed my eyes. I thought she was in the White Mansion.
You will restore her mortality. I will sift us to a world, but you will pretend you're doing it.
And your third boon?
One day, either the king or I will come to claim it.
I nodded. Knowing I had so little time left, it was doubtful anyone would claim anything further from me. When he brought Avil inside, her eyes narrowed. I can't help you, she said instantly. I'm not asking you to, I told the woman, whose mere existence had caused every single problem I'd had, through no fault of her own. But as a pawn on a vast chessboard, in a game played by vast beings. It wasn't as if there was anything she could do to save us anyway. I would be dead soon, with no true magic to require advice about. I'm going to take you somewhere. Where? She demanded. I glanced at the DEG, and the transition was seamless. Suddenly, the three of us stood beneath the triple canopy of a tropical rainforest, and I was hearing the DEG's voice in my head, telling me what to say. "The king protected your world," I told her. "Though your clan is long dead, you will find your planet the same." She stared blankly at me, then passed my shoulder, then at me again. "My world exists. I'm home. But how do you know any of this? How did you even know where to find it?" That was a tricky one. I waited for the DEG to say something, and he didn't, so I said, "The Shisadu knew about it. It was in the king's memories." She spun in a slow circle, absorbing her surroundings with faint wonder. I relayed the DEG's next words. "I'm gonna make you mortal, so you may live and die as you've always wished. You will not perish with the earth." She whirled back to me. "Why would you do that? I left you and your world to die." I stared into her vaguely puzzled, sad eyes, and these words were my own. "There was nothing you could have done to save us. No more than I." The DEG whispered in my brain the key words to sort through my mental file so I could find the spell to transform her. Along with his words came a rush of dark power, and I whizzed through the tab so quickly it pissed me off that he hadn't been around a few weeks ago when I really could have used this kind of boost. Then another flood of raw, unfocused energy exploded inside me as he boosted me further, since I could no longer tap into the earth. I murmured the words of an ancient curse, used to turn a fey human as punishment by the queen. Avil stiffened and hissed, doubling over as she transformed. Then I felt another jolt of magic flow through me from the DEG, and her hair and skin began to darken to a lovely shade of brown. Glossy dark curls tumbled to her waist. Her clothing shimmered, shifted, and flowed into a brilliantly colored tunic. When finally she straightened, she inclined her head in an imperious nod, then, with her bird on her shoulder, turned and walked, slowly, stiffly, into the forest. "Ah, fly now," the bird squawked. She paused and glanced up at it. With a ghost of a smile, the concubine removed her shoes and curled her bare toes into the leaves and soil. She closed her eyes and inhaled deeply. Then she shook herself, gathered her skirts, and dashed off into the lush, dense wood. The brilliant squawking bird soared into the air, taking flight above her. We stood watching until they'd both vanished. Abruptly, I was back at BB&B, alone. I sank down onto the sofa and sighed. The iconic love affair was truly irrevocably over. The concubine was finally all she'd ever wanted to be. Mortal. She would die. The king would go on. With a heart that was heavy for too many reasons to count, I stretched out on the Chesterfield and waited for Barons to come home. I woke to his hands on me, sliding up beneath my shirt, closing on my breasts, and lust and need and grief exploded inside me. We shed our clothing urgently, kissing so deeply we couldn't breathe, and I knew a thing about breath. You didn't need it when you had this kind of love. And you didn't want it if you lost this kind of love. Once, what seemed another lifetime ago, I decided to destroy this world because I'd lost this man. I hadn't made that decision when I'd lost my sister. And now, I was going to lose him again. I didn't want to keep breathing without him. I couldn't see myself transferring what true magic remained to another fey, going off-world with my sister and parents, and leaving him to die without me. Assuming I tried, I knew I'd never fall in love again. Where was I going to find another man like Jericho Barons? He was a singularity. And every man I met would only end up getting compared to what I'd loved and lost. And no, I didn't believe one day I'd get over him. There are some people you never get over. I was unable to make myself want to live without Barons. I wasn't embracing death. I didn't want to die. But if my choices were living without him for a long time or living with him for every minute I could, however brief. There was no contest. If there was an afterlife, I was taking my chance to go on with him, heaven or hell. I would live with this man, and by God, I would die with him too.
It's possible,
he said, moving inside me,
that I won't die right away. It's possible I could go off-world with you and live until I died that first and last time. Then simply not be able to be reborn. We might have a natural lifespan together.
Do you know that for certain? I gasped as he thrust deep. He didn't answer, but I didn't need him to. I'd overheard a conversation he'd had with Raiden the other day. Due to their origins, somehow none of them were sure they wouldn't simply cease to exist the moment the Earth did, no matter where they were in all the galaxies, just like the Fae.
I've had a long life. You haven't. You love your family. Go to another world. Find a husband.
He broke off, and that rattle began deep in his chest. His next words came out thickly around fangs.
Have children. Rebuild the human race. Live all those dreams you used to have.
Used to, I agreed, nipping his full lower lip. Don't anymore. Can't even conceive of them. You're my dream.
You can't just throw your life away.
What I can live with. What I can't live without. You taught me that.
Well, fucking unlearn it.
He exploded with such violence I startled and drew back.
Do you think I want to watch you die?
Ditto, I said coolly. You don't get to make my decisions for me. It's my life, and only I know what I need and what I'm willing to go through. I don't want to live without you. I felt that once. I never want to feel it again. I'd been lost, purposeless, denied heaven. It was as if his frequency and my frequency made such an exquisite song together that without it I wasn't alive.
You're being a bloody fool.
As if you haven't been a time or two. Jericho, I'm holding your hand right up to the last. We'll sit up high on Danny's water tower, watch the world blink out and blink out with it. I'll be staring into your eyes at the end, and we'll smile, and I'm okay with that. I was more than okay with that. It felt right, somehow. I'd found my soulmate, and whatever adventure was coming next, I was meeting it with him. Or drinking deeply of oblivion without him. I couldn't leave him. It was no longer possible. I wasn't sure it had ever been. Neither of us spoke again with words. Just our bodies, as we dumped our love and sorrow and need and commitment on each other. We made love, and we fucked. We slid together gently and crashed together like two great stones trying to chisel each other into another shape, aware that even if we managed to shave off a few slivers, our fundamental natures would never change. We were what we were. With him, I was everything I'd ever wanted to be. He brought out the best and worst in me, the most of everything. And when you got to have someone like that, anything less was empty. Pointless.
Jericho, I whispered against his ear. Thank you for everything.
I drew back and laughed, feeling inexpressibly light. It's been one hell of a ride. He smiled at me, dark eyes gleaming.
Rainbow Girl.
He laced his fingers with mine and said nothing for a long time. Then,
we'll find each other again. Somehow.
Of that, I had no doubt. 56. If you ever meet the Midnight Rambler coming down your marble hall. Shisadu. Floors of gleaming bronze turn to sunny yellow. Yellow will take me swiftly to white marble, to the blank, white room, and the mirror to my freedom. Michaela, I say, in a sing-song voice and laugh. Ready or not, here I come. 57. The blood of a lamb is worth two lions. Mac. I stood by the front door of BB&B and surveyed my store, smiling faintly. It was perfect. I decided to throw an end-of-the-world party tonight, and everyone I cared about was coming. After the party, I would walk my parents and Alina, along with Danny and Dancer, unless they decided to go through to a different world, to the porthole to New Earth and say my goodbyes. Pretending, of course, I'd be joining them soon. I'd lied to my daddy. I told him I was going to transfer the true magic. I don't know that he would have left otherwise. Then Barons and I would be virtually the only people left in the entire city, except for Raiden. The rest of the nine had gone to other worlds, on the gamble they might survive the end of the Earth to enjoy one last lifetime. Even Castillo had left, Dragon Cat and Sean O'Banion along with him. I wondered how she was faring, how she would fare when Sean died once the Earth no longer existed. I tried to project her future. If Castillo survived, would they build a life together on a new world? The bell tinkled behind me. Hey, Mac, where'd you find balloons? I turned, smiling, opened my arms to hug Danny, and much to my surprise, she moved into them and actually gave me a hug. A good, warm one, like she really liked me. I kissed her on the cheek, then rested my head against hers a moment. Then I drew back and searched her face intently. My Danny was fully there, blazing in her emerald eyes. Her hair was a tangle of long red curls, and she looked gorgeous in faded jeans, boots, and a leather jacket, sword strapped across her back. I narrowed my eyes. Something had changed. She was different than I'd ever seen her as a teenager or a woman. Out with it, what happened? I demanded as I steered her to the sofa. She told me. Everything. Too much, honestly. But she was young and bubbling over with the newness of being in love for the first time. I got details I'd never be able to burn out of my mind. I laughed out loud when she told me how she'd solved her letting him get to third base problem. I softened when she told me how awed he'd been that she wanted him. I tuned her out when she told me a few things, doing a sort of la-la-la in my brain. She'd been a virgin. Words couldn't express the relief I felt on that score. She'd given her innocence to Dancer last night. And, again, words couldn't express the relief I felt on that score. At first, when she'd returned as Jada, I thought it would and probably should be Raiden. Hardened cold Jada had seemed a decade older than the woman that sat with me now. But for Danny, Dancer was the perfect choice. He'd given her a normal teenage rite of passage, the only one she'd ever known. And my girl was on fire with the wonder of it, her fresh young skin glowing, her eyes sparkling. Her curls practically crackled with energy. She even moved differently. She had a subtle new self-awareness, an excitement for what the future might hold. She was at the very beginning of her life. I was at the end of mine. And that was more than okay. It was good. Because not so long ago, I'd been willing to die right then just to see her get a chance. Now she had more than a chance. She was Danny again. Actively engaging. Caring. So I'm thinking about taking Raiden up on what he said. She said finally. What's that? He said he'd take me and Dancer through to save Shazam. Make sure we got off that world to somewhere new. Her sparkling eyes dimmed and she shifted uncomfortably. How is Dancer? I asked softly. Green eyes locked with mine. He'll die. I just don't know when. Is there anything you can do? I mean, as the queen? I shook my head sadly. The only possibility is the elixir of life. I already offered it to him, and he refused. You did? Wait, he refused it? It has a nasty side effect. It destroys the immortal soul. She closed her eyes and sighed. He would never do that, because he died once, and he knows there's something more.
He did? He knows that?
I pounced on it.
For certain?
So Barons and I did have a chance to find each other again, like the two children in their boats at the end of What Dreams May Come.
He's certain, which means it's probably true. He's neither easily fooled nor prone to illogical sentimentality.
She was quiet a moment, then said,
I could slip it in one of his protein shapes.
My eyebrows climbed my forehead.
You would do that to him?
Not that I could or would give it to her. The elixir was hidden in Fairy, and I had no way of getting there. She blew out a gusty breath.
No,
she said nearly inaudibly.
I'd like to, but I couldn't.
None of us know how much time we get, Danny. Maybe that's what makes it so intense. Save Shazam. At least try. The three of you may end up getting a long life. Perhaps Shazam knows some way to help him.
She looked at me, startled. I didn't even think of that. But you're right. He might.
The doorbell tinkled and Alina stepped in. Danny glanced over her shoulder and froze, face blanching.
It's just my sister, I said lightly.
Hey, Danny,
Alina said with a warm smile.
I've heard so much about you from Mac, but we've never actually had a proper introduction.
Because I was, like, killing you shortly after we met, Danny said tightly.
Alina walked slowly to join us, pausing a few feet away.
How much do you remember of that day?
More than enough.
What I remember is that you were screaming at the end, tearing at your hair, vomiting all over yourself.
Danny, honey, it wasn't your fault. And if you don't quit blaming yourself, I'm gonna kick your ass all over this city and back.
You're not stupid. Get a grip on it. Rowena was a sadistic old bitch, and you were a child. A good child. End of subject. Let it go.
I mouthed a silent, love you, sis, Adelina. She'd said exactly the right words. Not too much, not too little, not too nice, not too harsh.
Danny said nothing for a long moment, just sat there in silence. Then she said,
You really mean that? You don't hate me?
No, and I didn't then. I felt sad for both of us, for being trapped in circumstances beyond our control. It was obvious you were being controlled, and you were fighting it with everything you had. Come off world with us tonight, Danny. Start a new life. Mac's coming in a few days. We'll be sisters.
She beamed.
The three of us.
Oh, fuck, that drove a knife through my heart. Danny would go to Shazam. Alina would go with Mom and Dad. I would die.
The three of us would never be peas in a megapod. That time had passed.
But for a while we could pretend.
I said quickly, What do you say we go for a stroll around our city? Take in the sights one last time? The three of us.
Danny turned and looked from me to Alina, back to me, and back to Alina again. Then she said slowly,
I'd like that.
I got another slice of heaven for a few hours that day. We walked around our deserted town and talked and reminisced. It was stiff at first between Danny and Alina, but my sister and I are so much alike that Danny didn't stand a chance. We detoured into the dark zone, stood outside 1247 LaRue, and swapped stories about it. We climbed Danny's water tower and looked out over the city as she told us about the night Riordan first offered a job. Then she filled me in on all I'd missed with the Hoarfrost King. We dropped by Alina's old place, and Danny showed us a couple of her favorite hidey holes, and we finally ended up at Chester's. Standing 40 feet away from what was now an enormous, roiling black hole, descending into the dug-out pavement beneath it. The entire sphere, except for a tiny walnut-sized blot of absolutely still blackness at the center, had become a whirling ergosphere. We held on to one another. Our jackets flapping briskly in the breeze it was throwing off.
Do you hear it, Mac? Alina said grimly.
The music was horrifying, and I more than heard it. I felt it in my bones. I knew then. Whatever happened to this planet was going to affect far more than merely our world. It was going to have a catastrophic impact on our entire galaxy. But it wouldn't stop with our galaxy. It would spread beyond that. This song of unmaking would slowly but inevitably unmake everything. It would take time, but it would happen. And it was my fault. I felt the blood draining from my face. I looked at Alina. What? She demanded. I shook my head. Just didn't expect it to be so big. The song hurts me. Does it you? She nodded. I lied. I forgot to get a couple of things for the party. See you guys later? They nodded, and I hugged them both fiercely and whispered, I love you, in their ears, before we went our separate ways. Over the course of my many encounters with Cruz, I'd attempted repeatedly to describe him in my journal as Vlaine or as himself. I'd used words like terrifyingly beautiful, godlike, possessing inhuman sexuality, deadly eroticism. I'd called him lethal. I'd called him irresistible. I'd cursed him. I'd lusted for him, even writhed beneath him. I'd called his eyes windows to a shining heaven. I'd called them gates to hell. I'd filled entries with scribblings that later made no sense to me, comprised of columns of antonyms. Angelic, devilish, creator, destroyer, fire, ice, sex, death. I'd made a list of colors, every shimmering shade of black, raven, blue, and ice known to man. I'd written of oils and spices, scents from childhood, scents from dreams. I'd indulged in lengthy, thesaurus-like entries, trying to capture the sensory overload that was Cruz. I'd failed at every turn to truly capture him, because I'd been describing his body, not his essence. If I was good and he was evil, or perhaps if I was light and he was dark, had I done enough to try to bring those two together in a truce? No. I'd written him off as a lost cause. Are we being tested? I'd asked the DEG. Always, was his reply. I stood in the empty museum because it was the site of one of my encounters with Vlaine, and because BB&B was sacred, and I wouldn't summon Cruz there, if I could summon him at all. But I was damn well going to try, despite what it might cost me. I sat on a small pedestal that had been looted of its artifact long ago, probably shortly after the walls fell. Holding my journal, I made another series of notes, because writing things down helps me think. Cruz was proud, vain, ruthless, deceptive, a consummate liar, powerful, power-hungry, cunning and committed. He'd manipulated and set into motion the very events that had precipitated the king creating the Shisadu and the destruction of the walls between our worlds and led us straight to our current disaster. He tried to control me. He'd used me every chance he'd gotten. He'd raped me. But as Avil had said, he was patient, wise. He'd seemed to sometimes actually have genuine emotion. As Vlaine, he'd told me that Cruz was the renegade, rogue warrior. He'd hidden and pretended to be someone else for more time than I could even conceive of, patiently pursuing his goals. And he had constantly maintained, despite the lack of any perceivable gain in it for him, the contention that he cared for me, wanted me. I'd seen that truth in his face, as I stood near the black hole at Chester's, and both Barons and Cruz had regarded me with identical expressions of hunger and desire. What had Cruz said then? You alone speak to the finest of all that I am. That was my mission, to bring out his finest now, by any means necessary. No boundaries, no refusals, even if it destroyed me inside and out. And it might. Because if Cruz gave me the song, it was entirely possible my using it would kill Barons but leave me alive. And it would definitely kill my sister. If I made love to him willingly, would he give me the song? Would avenging himself on Barons be amusement enough to entice? If he agreed, would he keep his word? I closed my eyes. If he was willing, could I go through with it? Yes. This wasn't about me. I was expendable. The universe wasn't. I'd pay any price to save it. Cruz, I said softly. Then more strongly, Cruz, I need you. Please come. At least listen to me. I beg of you. I'm begging. Do you hear me? Once you liked that. I see you now. I see the wrongs that were done to you. I see the chances you had and the chances you were never given. I've wronged you. I never let myself be open to you. I'm sorry.
Michaela, at last.
His voice arrived before his body, and I knew he'd been watching from somewhere beyond for some time. I wondered why he could still sift. How was that even possible? A faint outline appeared, filled in and solidified. He wore no glamour, but stood before me, unvarnished Cruz, the formidable, towering, iridescent-eyed Fae Prince, with majestic black velvet wings and kaleidoscopic tattoos. Then his wings were gone, and he was wearing tight-fitting black leather pants, steel-toed boots, and a rugged sweater. His long black hair was bound at his nape. His sharply chiseled face, stunning. His eyes flickered and changed before settling on warm gold. A chaise appeared, and he waved his hand toward it. I moved in silence, sank down onto it, and he joined me there, took my hand and knit his fingers with mine. We said nothing for a long, strange time, just held hands. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I realized something. If you look at someone long enough, it's as if their face sort of peels away. You start to notice tiny things you never noticed before. Whether the lines on their face tell a story of laughter and love or dissatisfaction and envy. Whether their eyes are filled with life and emotion or flat and empty. With a Fae, it's a little trickier because they can don glamour. But I was the Fae Queen, and I was a She-Seer, so I sought my inner lake and demanded it show me what was true. Did Cruz feel, as his eyes indicated, or was he empty inside? Could I reach him? How fine was his finest? My lake wasn't there. It took me a moment of inner reflection to realize I'd never found my lake. That inky, water-filled grotto had always been the Shisadu's abode, not mine. My lake wasn't dark. It was clear 10 feet down to a shade the color of tropical surf, and the surface glinted with sun. My lake wasn't filled with shadowy figments and tendrils of dank moss and relics I couldn't identify. It swam with brilliant runes and wards and all kinds of knowledge I'd never known I possessed. Again, I said, show me what is true. And again, I saw the same thing. Cruz wasn't one of the bad guys. I'd tasted monstrosity. It was the Shisadu. If I'd met you first, I said softly.
You might have loved me,
he finished for me.
And if you had loved me,
he said, and stopped. You might have changed. He gave me a bitter yet beautiful smile.
You did not even try to summon me. Not once did you look up at the ceiling or sky and call my name. That is how little you thought of me.
It was that simple. You were merely waiting for me to ask.
It took you too long. Now it will cost you.
His golden gaze rested on my lips, and his eyes narrowed.
I can die and, for however long sentient life continues, go down in history as the bastard that doomed the entire universe. Or I can die a martyr and go down in history as the champion that saved it. When nothing is left but your legacy, it begins to matter. Either way, very soon, my history will be written. It is all that is left to me. My name.